Welcome to another edition of ATL Developments with Jeff Smith, where we talk about everything economic development in the city where everyone works and plays here in Atlanta. The development scene in Atlanta has become a long way since back in the 1980s when we were just blasting off into what many called suburban sprawl. Business was booming and people were moving to the metro area from all over the world. Hundreds of large neighborhoods were built up and down I-85 and 75 throughout Cobb and Gwinnett, and then eventually up Georgia 400 through North Fulton. And, you know, there was so much demand for goods and services that almost any commercial development that was built became immediately successful. Our level of expectations for the development that surrounded us was not nearly as high as it is today. Most of the new people had just moved here for their new jobs and weren't plugged into their communities, and most of the cities and counties were thrilled to swell their tax base at the time. It was a gold rush, kind of a land grab, and our level of sophistication when it came to community planning wasn't quite where it is today. Early in the 2000s, the term mixed use started to become popular, and folks that had been here started looking around their communities and began wanting more. So city planners with better expertise took positions, and people started to want their communities to have more of a, you know, sense of place, to have a town center feel. They started getting tired of driving from one place to the next. The term strip malls became an ugly phrase, and we started to see things like Atlantic Station and people like that. And Suwannee, Duluth, and Woodstock began construction on town centers that have since attracted hundreds of new residents, businesses, and private investment development. And, you know, we were moving into an era of a new kind of development, and everyone wanted mixed use. And then the bottom fell out. We emerged from that in a system where the bottom fell out with a crash in 2008, by the way, if you don't recall. I'm sure most of you do. I know I do. But we emerged from that in a system where banks demanded more from their developers. No longer was money being lent easily to a developer who wanted to build it, then sell it. Banks wanted to see proof of a project's long-term viability. No longer was it good enough for a builder to put different uses next to each other and call it mixed use. The developer had to show how those uses played well off of each other, helping to create a successful microeconomy. As such, there needed to be a new model of mixed-use development. And my guest here today was at the forefront of creating some of these new rules, and his firm, Wakefield & Beasley, was hired by North American Properties to undergo hundreds of hours of research to create what was then the largest development of its kind, I think, in the country, something known as Avalon up in Alpharetta. His name is Lamar Wakefield, and we're going to talk to him today about planning and designing Avalon, as well as some of his other projects, including getting hired by the Atlanta Braves organization to develop and design, or to design and plan the Battery at SunTrust Park. Something last year that I just read made the Braves over $38 million, a portion of that which I'm hoping they spend on some new pitching, but we'll see what happens. Lamar's firm had grown to be one of the most sought-after firms for anyone looking for a town center concept. I am lucky to have him on his show, my show. Lamar, welcome. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing, buddy? Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, I always like to start out my show. This is my second show, by the way. But I always like to start it out. When I talk to somebody, I always like to know where they're from, because I'm from Roswell. I'm a native, and usually I'm the only one around. So on the first show, I wanted to know where the two guests were from, and they're both natives also. And I believe you're a native as well. So where'd you grow up around here?
Well, I am a native Atlanta, born here at Crawford Long Hospital, Cabbage Town resident. We did our playtime over Grant Park and so forth. We moved to DeKalb County when I was in the first grade, to Belvedere, went to Avondale High School after that, and then to Georgia Tech.
Oddly enough, I think one of our guests last week, Al Nash, I think we might have gone to the same high school. So that's he was definitely born at Crawford Long, so that's interesting. So you know, me and my wife Brenda grew up, we lived for a little bit in Candler Park, which was right across the tracks from Cabbage Town. When I was there, we always liked to listen to the sounds of gunshots they were there. I'd imagine it wasn't quite that way when you were growing up.
No,
maybe
it
changed.
It
what kind of place was Cabbage Town? Because it's got an interesting history too, doesn't it?
It has an interesting history. My grandmother actually worked at the mill there, the Fulton Bag Mill.
Mm-hmm.
Fulton Bag Cotton Mill. And, you know, it was just a – it was a very tight-knit community. There was a store, a little custom store on every corner for groceries and daily needs. Everything was very walkable because that's what you did. We had actually had electric trolleys back then in Atlanta, which
right.
was pretty cool.
Okay.
My mom worked for Rich's, which became Macy's for 42 years. My dad worked for the Journal for 47 years.
No kidding.
Back
okay.
in the time when everybody cared about their job and the employers cared about the employee, it was a little
right.
different.
Well, in Cabbage Town, correct me if I'm wrong, but the story I heard from Cabbage Town, how it started was – a lot of folks came to work at that mill from the mountains, and they all ate cabbage. And so the town smelled like cabbage because it was
exactly
cooking.
The reason it got yeah. the nickname. Nobody could afford anything else other than cabbage, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. And, you know, I said the same thing last week to the two folks that were on that grew up in downtown Atlanta. I think you live in Milton these days, or you're
Johns Creek.
Johns Creek,
yeah.
And so Roswell, Johns Creek, when you were growing up, probably wasn't anywhere on your radar.
No, when we I can remember going to church camp in the summertime, and it was on the Chattahoochee River there at Northridge.
Okay,
that was
yeah.
way out of town because there was no 285, all gravel roads and so forth.
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit
yes,
over the years.
Has.
We've grown a lot. So I know the backstory on your firm, and I don't want to get into that too much. I'd rather just jump right to the Avalon phase because I think there's a lot to talk about there, and I try to keep my shows, you know, between about 20 to 30 minutes. I know that you did a little bit of work on Atlantic Station, and but, you know, if I could skip forward to Avalon, so Mark Toro, North American Properties, they were the developer on that project. How did that whole thing come to – I'm very interested in knowing, you know, or learning how – hearing how you all came together on that project and kind of what was the vision and how did it all start out? You know, how did that whole thing start out?
Right. So we actually did Atlantic Station the first time with the partnership that was developed between AIG and their – partners there, and from a merchandising perspective, it was not what happens today, so we really didn't have a very successful retail component. And after the AIG was actually forced to sell that project because of the recession, the federal government made them sell it, and so North American with C.B. Richard Ellis Global Investors purchased it, and Mark Toro, who'd been a friend and client forever, called us back in on the project, and we started re-merchandising Atlantic Station. And while I was down there, we were then working for Wells Fargo because they had taken back the Prospect Park project that had been started on the Avalon site. And
right.
The lender had been Wachovia. They went out of business. That paper was bought by Wells Fargo, and so they
just for those that don't know, there was a project that was kind of had started right before the downturn, and then everything stopped. And I remember for years there was nothing but a couple concrete slabs with some pipes coming out of the ground,
right.
And it was a real sign of the times.
It was a sign of the times. So I told Mark, I said, you need to come to Alpharetta and look at this project because Wells Fargo is going to put it on the street for sale, and they did. And that's how we got started with Avalon and Mark. And so from that point, recognizing two really important things about Avalon was the demographics and the psychographics. So when you're doing a mixed-use deal like that, from a retail perspective, we do a 3, a 5, and a 10-mile radius. We do a 10-mile radius because mommies will drive 10 miles to go to Whole Foods. They'll do that. All
okay.
the food and beverage and soft good people, soft goods retailers only care about the 3-5-mile radius. So if you took the 10-mile radius, which is a 20-mile circle, at that time in 2012, it was the wealthiest 20-mile circle in the United States, the wealthiest. Not the wealthiest 6-mile or 10-mile, but the wealthiest 20-mile circle. 31 gated communities where the minimum house price was $1 million was in that circle, 31
wow.
gated communities.
Okay.
So that helped us when retailers see that, you know, that obviously checks a big box for them. But we were still – the switch wasn't on yet. So Mark and I and our teams collectively, we made 4 separate trips around the country looking at the very finest retail mixed-use deals that had ever been done. The ones were vertically integrated. Everything from the Domain in Austin to Santana Row, The Grove, Americana at Brand, Reston Town Center, everyone. We probably went to 45 properties.
So you knew you wanted to do something really big here.
We wanted to do it big, and we wanted to do it right. So we took thousands of pictures of what we liked and thousands of pictures of what we didn't like. Mm-hmm. We laser taped spaces that felt great, and we laser taped spaces that didn't feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
And combined all that information to understand the correct proportions, the widths of the streets, you know, this whole term of 20-20 vision where the sidewalk's 20 feet wide and the store's 20 feet tall, that's kind of what came out of all that with us. And so fortunately, having a developer like North American who, as Mark will always say, when we get together, believe what we believe, then you can create things like Avalon.
I don't want to say it's like you had a blank check or something like that, but clearly when you're shooting for that big of a project, I mean, certainly one would think that somewhere along the way, somebody's going to start trying to pull the reins in. I mean, and I'm not sure exactly where I'm going with that comment, but it seemed like I'm sure a lot of projects you have, you're constrained by certain budgets and all kinds of stuff.
All of them.
But Avalon's budget was just so high.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. You know, Seraphim was the equity on that deal, and they were very, very close to the day-to-day goings-on on that development.
Because this was not in a time where everybody was flush with cash.
Well, plus we really had a tough time attracting the tenants that we wanted because everybody was so afraid of vertical sticks and bricks in 2012-13. Mm-hmm. You know, we opened in November of 2014. You know, as an example – you know, one of our larger women's fashion, which was number one in the country at that time, we couldn't really quite get them to come. We had somebody else on the front corner. And when they finally came, it helped us get Lululemon, Athleta, J. Crew, all these people who want to be next to this one retailer. So
sure.
All that goes into merchandising. I think I've told you before, we did 128 merchandising plans in phase one of Avalon just to move tennis around until we had the very best solution.
I was going to ask you about that because that number has always fascinated me. Because tell everybody what a merchandising plan is.
All right, so that's arrangement of the tenants. So we do. It's not about leasing anymore.
Right.
It's really not. Not trying to get space filled up. What you're trying to do is put tenants next to one another that do two things. They promote cross shopping and they increase dwell time. And that's the key to the energy you need for these things to be successful. People come to Avalon and don't ever go in a store. They just come to Avalon.
Right.
On Easter Sunday 2 years ago, the general manager called me. I know I was in church that day, but he called me and said there were 650 people on our green in Avalon and nothing was open, not even a coffee shop, nothing.
Right.
Everyone wants it there. So you see that play out in places like Duluth, Suwannee,
right,
so forth. And the reason we're doing town centers for Holly Springs and Lilburn and Lawrenceville and Tucker and all these places, people want it and they want to walk to it if they can.
They want that sense of place.
They do.
And so the thing, one of the things that merchandising before, like you said, it's not about leasing. And you say this like it's pretty easy. It rolls off your tongue pretty easy. But, you know, what I think what you mean by what Lamar is saying is people would build, and as long as you had everything leased up, you're happy. But you're taking it way a couple steps further and saying, okay, we don't just want to lease it out. We want to lease it out to very specific people, and we want to figure out how they're going to play off of each other. And, I mean, was that where do you even come up with that information?
Well, really.
I mean, where do you find that?
On our trips.
Yeah.
As we went around and looked at what was really super successful. You know, Phipps does whatever they do, say $850 a foot in sales as a group. Which projects did we look at that had the highest sales and highest visitation, and why was that? And we began to watch it. And we'd stay on these trips for a week and just people watch and see what they were doing and where they were sitting. And, you know, the guy would, you know, these open container laws where we have one at Avalon, you know, a guy's got a glass of wine. He's sitting on the bench watching these folks walk by, and his wife goes to four different stores.
Right.
You know, all right together. So if you look at Avalon, you'll see where the men's fashion is. You'll see where the children's fashion is. You'll see furniture. It all, we group it so that we get the cross-shopping. It's really important to, you know, it's about entering, you know, these zonings I go to, I try to deliver the message that density is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only thing susceptible to failure at Avalon is not multifamily, it's not the hotel, it's not the office space, it's not the entertainment, not Regal. It is the food and beverage and the soft good retailer. So we have to energize the space 16 hours a day. So when that daytime shopper and the office user are leaving at 5:30, the resident's showing up. And as many of them as we can put on the site.
That's right.
That's the key.
And that's one of the key with mixed use and having an office component, which the office component is now under construction. I know the Microsoft ended up being a big tenant there. Is that phase complete?
That was in phase two.
That was in phase
building 8,000 was that building. That building's 100% occupied.
Right.
And so is all the loft office, 100% occupied. There's 100,000 feet of that.
And they've moved in already. I
mean, Microsoft's in, but we're building this last building, which is a 11-story mm-hmm. building. And what happens is that and John Hagee and Kurt Hartman at Hines did an amazing job at pitching this, because here we are at $40 a square foot in a $26 market.
Yeah, right.
How does that work? Well, the reason it works is because we have a presentation, we show people, like Microsoft already knows it, but what is the benefit of recruiting and retaining the best talent?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better? Is it make your company more money on the bottom line, or does the cost of your occupancy saving that money? Which is it? It's not even close. Having the best kids, doing the best projects, doing the best product, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's fighting for talent right now, and employment's we're pretty much full pool.
It's full pool.
So you're having to steal employees from other companies at this point, certainly qualified ones. So living in a place like Avalon where they can walk out for lunch or even, you know, happy hour,
you
all
know,
that stuff.
You know, maybe even live in the multifamily there or the single family that's for sale.
That's right. So that's fantastic. So when you look on Avalon now, I mean, it's not completely done. They're still building it out, but certainly it's been around long enough. You know, if you think about it as a big project, I assume you're using lessons learned from that on your new projects. I imagine you've got people calling you saying, we want Avalon. You know, we want maybe not Avalon, but a piece of it. You know, that something to it. What are you – did you – the merchandising plans and all that research, is that just being plugged in now for
– It's so different in every market, but we're doing an Avalon-esque kind of project right now at Gwinnett Infinite Energy called Revel
for
North American properties. Different demographic, different psychographic, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's –
Tell us what a psychographic is.
That's just
is.
The tendencies that the community at large has. I mean, is this a very healthy, active community? They like walking, running. You know, you get people who want to live next to the Greenway, and you all of a sudden you have a community of walkers, right?
Right.
Or runners or whatever. So,
okay.
And then just what they like to do from an entertainment perspective. And this is all information that can be gleaned through these demographic profiles. So that project, one for North American up in Riverton. It's called Riverton. It's in Sarrieville, New Jersey. We're doing a big project in Cary, North Carolina, called Fenton. One in Oklahoma City. One in Dallas. One in Charleston. And several other small ones, but there's a secret sauce that goes into it, and it starts with having great demographics and great psychographics.
Yeah, right.
That's where it starts.
Yep. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. One of the coolest projects, I mean, you move on from Avalon, and I'm going to talk about the Atlanta Braves now and that project, the Battery. You know, I remember Turner Field, even before that, I remember Fulton County Stadium. You know, you'd park. I mean, I remember the last time I went to Turner Field, you'd park with your kids, try to take them to the baseball game, and you'd get into that stadium as quickly as you could. They never developed much around. So the Braves around the stadium wasn't a lot to do at that time other than park and maybe buy a T-shirt and get in the stadium. But the Braves had a vision of this whole city that they've hired you to design for them. How did that connection happen? How did that work out?
Essentially, they called me and said, we want to come visit Avalon and look at it and talk to you a little bit. So they're, you know, Mike Plant, Derek Schiller, Terry McGurk. They came to the office, and you know, Mike told me later that the reason they hired us for the assignment was our approach was it's not the 81 days you're playing baseball, it's the 284 days you're not playing baseball that we need to design for.
Right.
That's what we have to make work here. And let me say this about that. That project's a lot grittier. It's cool. It's got great office components, you know, with Comcast and good hospitality with Omni. We're doing a new – the last phase is going up now, AC Hotel, AC Marriott Hotel over a Savvy Grocer, some more food and beverage, a dinner theater, Silver Spot, and then the ThyssenKrupp's new corporate headquarters.
Right.
So that's the last phase, plus an addition to the Omni Hotel, 200 more rooms we're talking about.
Right,
for that.
So all going up in the Battery. Right.
It's all been super successful, but you'll notice also that there's no women's fashion there. And the reason for it is the 3 and 5 mile radius. If you can't check every box on that, you're not getting it.
I see.
So it's mostly entertainment, and the Roxy's done great. Live Nation's an amazing company. The Office is very popular there, even the Loft product. And the co-working space we did there for Spaces. Very popular, with a lot of food and beverage and some men's sporting Under Armour type stores.
Right. So the Battery, the name The Battery, was I think it's got so much depth to it.
Yeah.
And I bet half of our listeners, probably 90% of our listeners, have no idea that Battery is actually a baseball term.
Yes.
And you're a baseball guy. I know we've talked about it before. I know you did a lot of baseball with your son. Was growing up and got involved. So, tell everybody what a bat. I know you're very passionate about baseball. Tell everybody what the Battery actually is.
Well, the Battery is the combination of the pitcher and the catcher. That's
right.
The Battery. And so, if you'll look at the logo, you'll see how the first three letters BAT is also highlighted in a different color than the rest of the word Battery.
Right.
So, the bat. We spent 2 full days in a charrette to come up with this name. And there were a lot of ideas and a lot of really good ideas, but at the end, I think it fits extremely well.
Well, I mean, people know there's other developed areas around the country that
right.
they're called the Battery.
And Charleston,
so,
New York.
Right.
Yeah.
You got the Battery, and here we are with baseball. And most people probably stop at the bat, and they think you're just trying to be clever with the fact that the word bat is in the name.
Right.
They don't know that it's actually the pitcher and catcher. But me and you are baseball guys, so
yeah.
I'm on the inside there. Now you guys are all on the inside. But being a baseball guy, how excited were you to get this project? I mean, to be able to develop a community around a professional baseball stadium, I mean, that must have been pretty – I know y'all made your bones on industrial space and all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure is very exciting to do. But to be able to get to do that, what was that like?
Well, it was just the Braves are a great client. They picked –
Yeah,
three really quality partners in Pope and Land and Pollock Shores and Fuquay to help them do the retail, multifamily, and office components. And then the JLL team was hugely involved with from a program management, leasing, acquisition of the property, keeping everything quiet. It was an incredibly well-kept secret, incredibly well-kept. So it was a great, exciting project for us. And then having Comcast move their corporate headquarters there, and we're on the terabit, which is one of our core values when we do these projects, is having advanced technology. It's really important for kids not to run out of space when they're trying to text somebody at a place like that. And you know how that can happen at a football game where everybody's on the phone and you just can't get service. So
okay.
The terabit there and all touch screens for making reservations or whatever you want to do.
So you said one thing that's interesting. So you might have known the Braves were moving, I guess, before everybody else did. I imagine there was some discussion. I don't know if we want to talk about that or not, because it was quite an uproar here in Atlanta. A lot of the in-town folks felt like the Braves abandoned them. The numbers show they moved closer to, I think it was like 75% of their season ticket holders. But I won't even make you talk about it. But it's just interesting to get on the ground floor of that.
It was a tough process. And truly, when they saw that Cobb County was where most of their season ticket holders are,
right.
in the North Ring right there, it certainly made the decision easier. It was a really, really tough site. They buried most of the trees. They cut off 285 when they cleared it. So we had 50 feet of organics on half the site and the other half was solid rock. So it was a pretty tough site to work on.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And Cobb County, I mean, certainly you needed their help, but boy, they put a lot of money into infrastructure improvements and getting roads moved and bridges.
I always tell people there's 390 million reasons the Braves went to Cobb County.
Yeah, that's about right. And good for Cobb County.
Yes.
Nobody was talking about cool developments in Cobb County. Now
it's changed
a lot
the values
of stuff
over there so dramatically.
Yeah,
it's paying the bonds back at a much higher pace than they thought.
Right.
So it's been a good deal for everybody.
Well, fantastic. Well, we're getting close to the end, and so I wanted to as you know, I get involved in the community a lot. I do a lot of volunteer stuff locally in Roswell, and I know one project that I've always been very kind of fascinated with and following is the City of Refuge project that's
right.
going on down by Mercedes-Benz Stadium. For those that don't know, it's kind of a project where a group of high-level city leaders have kind of, in one of our highest crime areas, have tried to make a successful community for the people that live there currently. Can you tell me a little bit about City of Refuge? And
Toro's on the board there.
Yeah.
He's gotten really involved with City of Refuge. But it's a place that people can go safely. They can get medical care. They can eat food. They can sleep.
Right.
They can be trained to get back in the workforce. It's an amazing ministry. But our kids at our office are all about giving back. So as an example, we're doing the new facility for the Atlanta Mission on Ethel Street. It's about an $18 million project. We're doing it gratis because we want to do all the work for Wellspring Living and a variety of other Champions House. It's fun.
Good. Well, as you know, I find your work fascinating. It looks like a lot of fun from out here. I'm sure you keep yourself busy. But thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for offering all your interesting stories and the background of what for you is work and for everybody else is play.
It's my pleasure, Jeff.
Yeah, so thank you very much and hope to talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jeff Smith, and in case you don't know, I am a mortgage banker with Assurance Financial who does write a newsletter. I used to be a newspaper reporter 20 years ago, but I make my living doing residential home loans. So if you need a mortgage, if you're buying a house, please give me a call. You can find me at phone number 678-779-5066. Email address is gsmith@lendtheway.com. It's like Lead the Way, except we lend money, so it's lendtheway.com. So that's another edition of Developments in the ATL with Jeff Smith. Lamar Wakefield, thank you very much. Hope y'all have a great month.